E-tidings Cosmos, good morning 21st century world of worlds. This is Radio Richard Ireland, coming to you from within the soundproofless studio of life itself. Tá míle fáilte ró anseo. I am your host, Richard McSweeney. Hear this, listener, give it here your fullness of ear. From the beginning there is breath, and upon that breath there are words. In a vision of the day, saw a very old man dressed in ancient clothes, and he's standing on a jutting out rock overlooking a small lake in the hills. And in his hands he was holding a long stick, and he raised it up over his head, and with uttering some words down to the waters of the lake, it immediately changed into 100% Irish whiskey. And in a moment he vanished right before my eyes. Right away there was a sudden fierce rustling sound in the laurel bushes about the lake, and there emerged from them several very low-sized people, male and female small people or little people, all dressed in green with high green hats on their heads. I recognized them to be the so-called leprechauns of the warped stories told from of old. And they went down, rushing down to the shore of the lake, and were hurriedly lapping up the golden liqueur, as parched hunting dogs would, from muddied up pools of water they happened upon along their way. Gulping it down they were, as if there wasn't another drop of whiskey on the island to be had. And every few minutes they would be running back and forth to the bushes to be relieving themselves of their overfill. The whole scene made me very ever so sad, for I knew it to be far by far removed from the true and noble spirit of Erin. And I left from that pitiful sight with a heavy heart. In today's broadcast, I'll be reading from Prince Hamlet, The Republic, and the true classic of Southern Taoist fragrance. This is a reading in continuity from Prince Hamlet. I do believe you think what now you speak, but what we do determine off we break. Purpose is but the slave to memory, a violent bird but poor validity, which now like fruit and ripe sticks on the tree, but fall and shaken when they mellow be. Most necessary 'tis that we forget to pay ourselves what to ourselves is death. What to ourselves in passion we propose, the passion ending, that the purpose lose. The violence of either grief or joy, their own enactures with themselves destroy. Where joy most revels, grief doth most lament. Grief joys, joy grieves on slender accident. This world is not for aye, nor 'tis not strange, that even our loves should with our fortunes change. For 'tis a question left us yet to prove, whether love lead fortune, or else fortune love. The great man down, you mark his favourite flies, the poor advance makes friends of enemies, and hitherto that love and fortune tend, for who not needs shall never lack a friend. And who in want a hollow friend or try, directly seasons him his enemy. But orderly, to end where I begun, our wills and fates do so contrary run, that our devices still are overthrown, our thoughts are ours, their ends none of our own. So think thou will no second husband wed, but die thy thoughts when thy first lord is dead. Nor e'er to me give food nor heaven light, sport and repose lock from me day and night. To desperation turn my trust and hope, and anchor's cheer in prison be my scope. Each opposite that blanks the face of joy, meet what I would have well, and it destroy. Both here and hence pursue me lasting strife, if once a widow, ever I be wife. If she would break it now. 'Tis deeply sworn, sweet, leave me here a while. My spirits grow dull, and fain I would beguile the tedious day with sleep. Sleep rock thy brain, and never come mischance between us twain. Madam, how like you this play? The lady protests too much, methinks. Oh, but she'll keep her word. Have you heard the argument? Is there no offence in it? No, they do but jest, poison jest. No offence in the world. What do you call the play? The Mousetrap. Marry how? Tropically. This play is the image of a murder done in Vienna. Gonzago is the Duke's name, his wife Baptista, you shall see anon. 'Tis a knavish piece of work. But what of that? Your Majesty and we, that have free souls, it touches us not. Let the gall jade wince, our withers are unwrung. This is a soliloquy of mine, of Plato's The Republic. Is it then the part of a just man to harm any human being whatsoever? Certainly bad men and enemies ought to be harmed. Do horses that have been harmed become better or worse? Worse. With respect to the virtue of dogs or to that of horses? With respect to that of horses. And when dogs are harmed, do they become worse with respect to the virtue of dogs and not to that of horses? Necessarily. Should we not assert the same of human beings? That when they are harmed, they become worse with respect to human virtue? Most certainly. But isn't justice human virtue? That's also necessary. Then human beings who have been harmed necessarily become more unjust. It seems so. Well, are musicians able to make men unmusical by music? Impossible. Are men skilled in horsemanship able to make men incompetent riders by horsemanship? That can't be. But are just men able to make others unjust by justice? Of all things? Or in sum, are good men able to make other men bad by virtue? Impossible. For I suppose that cooling is not the work of heat, but of its opposite. Yes. Nor wetting the work of dryness, but of its opposite. Certainly. Nor is harming, in fact, the work of the good, but of its opposite. It looks like it. And it's the just man who is good? Certainly. Then it is not the work of the just man to harm either a friend or anyone else, but of his opposite, the unjust man. In my opinion, what you say is entirely true. Then, if someone asserts that it is just to give what is owed to each man, and he understands by this that harm is owed to enemies by the just man and help to friends, the man who said it was not wise, for he wasn't telling the truth, for it has become apparent to us that it is never just to harm anyone. I agree. We shall do battle then as partners. You and I, if someone asserts that Simonides or Bias or Pittacus or any other wise and blessed man said it. I, for one, am ready to be your partner in the battle. Do you know to whom, in my opinion, that saying belongs which asserts that it is just to help friends and harm enemies? To whom? I suppose it belongs to some rich man who has a high opinion of what he can do. What you say is very true. This is an interpretation, after my own fashioning, of some lines from the true classic of Southern Taoist fragrance. Nautry Star visitor spoke to me, saying, Humaculate of Era, what stories, what anecdotes, what insights do you bring to this new dawn? Once, while carefreely sowing seeds, along by the bank of a stream, a human well known to me, who was sitting close by and contemplating the high blue sky, spoke to me, saying, Do you clearly know the part the non-human in you plays? Do you also clearly know that which the human in you plays? And I answered, Yes, clearly I do. Then she said, You are in the perfection of knowledge. We humans know next to nothing when it comes to such matters. All with us is conjecture, for we don't know, are we totally human or partly human, like yourself, or whether we may even be partly divine. And even if we were to believe we are both human and divine, we have no idea as to what extent we are either of. What is divine? What is divinity? It is the very presence of the one God above all gods within us. Who told you such to be so? Our sacred books did, and the words of our religious teachers faithfully handed down from generation to generation. From where or whom did your sacred writings come from? Be the full word told, from the one God above all gods, by way of our prophets. I see. And she asked, besides being part human and part non-human, do you have any divinity, any divine in you? No, no, I don't. But there is that of me which is greater than that what you call divine or divinity. And she smiled, and with finding it more comfortable for the moment that was in it, returned to beginning, saying, how do you know that what you call the human in you is not the non-human, that what you call the non-human is not the human? I clearly know which is which. What is human in me is fully human. What is non-human, fully non-human. Would that we humans could be so clear about such things and the like. And I smiled and resumed the sowing of seeds, she her contemplation of the high blue sky. In a dawn reverie of this new day, meditated I on what an immortal self of mine did say, did lovingly relay way back in days of long, long, long gone by. O mortal self of mine, when with living in your own realm and time, you will in the brightness of day make the starry darkness of night your secret hiding place. In the darkness of night, the sunny brightness of day. All right, I will leave it at that for today. Enjoy taking very good care of yourself and those around you. Be ever so grateful for your many blessings. And spare a thought, too, for people living in faraway places, in all different kinds of situations, often very difficult and not at all of their own making. You have been listening to an Irish philosopher of the natural kind, bringing radio to the internet via Radio Richard Ireland, on the air globally for about 15 minutes, Monday to Friday, and occasionally on the weekends. The script format of today's broadcast will be available at a future date on AuthenticCloseTDramascripts.com. It is truly an honor to have you listening. May you be a blessing unto yourself by way of your past, by way of your present, and by way of your future. Slán agus ba nacht leat.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.